नमो तस्सा भगवतो अरहतो सम्मा सम्बुद्धस्सा। नमो तस्सा भगवतो अरहतो सम्मा सम्बुद्धस्सा। गुड मॉर्निंग एवरीवन। So today we are going to start a new course. The course is named as the Fundamentals of the Theravada Doctrine. This is mainly aiming regarding how to understand the teachings found in the Theravada Doctrine. When I say the doctrine, it refers to, we know, Tipitaka commentaries and also the sub-commentaries of the Theravada tradition, which was preserved for thousands of years, especially in the Sri Lanka. And as we know, there are various Buddhist traditions emerged time to time. Among them, Theravada is one of the sects. So this course is not to compare the Buddhist doctrines with each other. This is just to elaborate the basic fundamentals that are found in the Theravada teachings. So when I say the fundamentals, I refer to the teaching, very basic rudimentary facts that are necessary to understand the Buddhist doctrine, especially the suttas and the Buddha's teachings, very deeply. So when we explain a certain tradition, the Buddhist teachings have been explained, elaborated in various ways. That's why we have various schools emerged time to time during the phase of the history. So Theravada tradition has unique ways of interpreting the Buddha's teachings. They may differ from some other traditional explanations, like the tradition of the Sarvastivadins, the tradition of the Mahayanas, and so forth. So the Theravadians have their own unique way of explaining the teachings. So when we are discussing about the traditions, the fundamentals of the Theravada tradition,
sorry, Pandey.
Yes.
I think some friends, they don't know how to turn from your side. We have to click the screen, yeah. So the board will come out. Otherwise, they only listen to like radio or something like that.
Can you say it again? Say to the old audience again.
Yeah, all friends, if you cannot see the screen, please just click Maga Bandi. Bandi, which one are you sharing your screen?
Maga Vihari.
Okay, another Maga Vihari, right? That ID.
There are two Maga Viharis, yeah.
Okay, please click another Maga Vihari Bandi's the video, and if you click two times, so the screen will come out.
And for the computer, it's different, right?
The computer is the same.
Unpin. You have to unpin the others. Okay.
Actually, the student can click the icon that said Maka Vihari, and there is a pin. You just put the pin. You just click at the pin, and the screen will be the teacher.
Thank you very much. I hope everyone can... find the way to see the video. So I'll come back to the explanation. So we have certain unique explanations about how to interpret the Buddhist teachings. There can be some arguments on this fact, how whether this is accurate or not. So in this course, I'm not going to compare the teachings of different traditions. Basically, what I'm doing is explaining how the Theravada teachings have been explained for these thousands of years, and later you have the decision, you can make the decision whether to accept it or not, because sometimes I'll be referring, because when we explain the teachings, the text, sometimes I refer to the commentary, sometimes to the sub-commentaries. So then we'll try to find out how this is, how this matches, fits with the basic teachings, the suttas and so forth. So therefore, this is a course that I would, aims at discussing about the very basic, deep fundamentals that are not discussed much today. And it's not only a teaching aiming at the suttas. I'm covering the entire doctrine. So how to get this idea, holistic idea about the Theravada teachings and about the, how it has been interpreted by a tradition. When I say a tradition, it is a lineage of monks, lineage of teachers, for which has lasted for thousands of years, and how they interpret the teachings for the posterity. So then we'll first, from tomorrow, because we couldn't upload it today, I hope you can see this. There's a website called www.theravado.com. In this website, under the icon fundamentals, under the icons fundamentals, there will be a handout which will be uploaded in the website, so you can download this. And also in the future lessons, there will be some books that will be put into this website, so you can download it, and I will be taking these books as the reference for the class. So first, I'll directly plunge into the topic. So the topic says fundamentals of the Theravada doctrine. So when we talk about the teachings explained in the Theravada tradition, so we have to first understand what the Theravada teachings is explaining about the world, about the life, and how this continues, and what is the nature of this life, and it has been explained as a suffering, and how to stop the continuation of this suffering. These are the very basics of this teaching. So today I'll be going to draw the entire doctrine into a diagram, the basic things into a diagram. So after that, in the further lessons, I'll be elaborating or explaining the components of this diagram. So we'll, at the end of the class, we'll be discussing about a diagram about the life, and also how it has been explained in the Buddhist teachings. So the basic, very basic explanation, like something that we cannot avoid when we talk about the Theravada teachings, is the idea of ultimacy. So idea of ultimacy means, this is the explanation about what really exists. So what really exists? There have been some teachings which explains about the emptiness in some Buddhist sects, like the Sunyatavada explained by Madhyamikas, and also has been explained by certain teachers of the Theravada traditions recently. But when we talk about ancient tradition in the Theravadas, the ultimacy plays a huge role. According to the Theravadins, there are certain natures that really exist. I'll repeat it again. There are certain natures that really exist according to the Theravada teachings. So we do not deny, or we do not expound the doctrine about an emptiness. There is a certain two types of emptiness explained in the Theravada teachings. One is the emptiness of suffering in Nibbana. That's the one thing. Emptiness of suffering in Nibbana. It doesn't mean that Nibbana is an emptiness. It is empty of suffering. And then we also talk about emptiness of a self. It means the realities that we experience is devoid of a self. I think you will have some questions to ask when I say so. So at the end of this class, like, I'll be teaching for nearly 1 hour, and there'll be a Q&A session afterwards. So you can raise the questions after we have done the lectures. So according to the teachings, the Theravadins are talking about a doctrine called ultimacy. According to them, there are certain natures that do exist. So we categorize these natures. Basically, we call one is a citta in Pali, because the Theravada doctrine was taught in Pali. So if we render it into English, we come into a word called consciousness. Right? Then we come into another component called cetasika. We call them mental factors. That's how we translate it in English. And then we have something called rupa. Rupa is called matter. These are the basic three ultimate realities that we experience in the life. There is another reality called Nibbana, which is not related to the life, which is the freedom from the suffering that is going to happen. So these three elements, these three natures are considered as the very basic of a life. So consciousness, I'll come one by one. the consciousness is means the act of knowing something. So this is, we call, it's not, if we explain it scientifically, consciousness has various explanations and it's not a fixed definition is there. But according to the Theravadians, consciousness means a certain act of cognizing an object, knowing an object. So if we explain it further, a little bit detailedly, there are various things that we can know. If we take, these are the objects that we are supposed to focus. There are lots of thousands of objects in the universe. So at a time, we are focusing one object at a time. For example, if we take all these as objects, one time we focus at one object. For instance, we take this as the object, so we focus on this. So if our mind is focusing on this, so what does it mean? The act of knowing something means there are various objects that can be known. Out of them, we are aware of one object. We separate the others from all one object from others, and we are focusing on a particular object. This act of focusing at an object is called the consciousness. In Pali, we call it vijnana, and sometimes we call it citta. I'll repeat again, the act of knowing an object is further explained as separating an object from others and focusing on it. It doesn't mean that when we focus an object, we do both the acts at the same time. It doesn't mean that we take out one object and focus, like we select something and you focus on something. This is like, naturally, when we are focusing at a certain object, we, at the same time, we are denying or ignoring all the other objects and focusing on this. That is what called the function of citta. So it means we are aware of something. If we take it practically, what kind of a thing is it? If we think about, like, for instance, we are listening to this talk, we are focusing on the screen, and suddenly if we remember our house or our room where we live, our apartment, so, and then we suddenly come back to this class. So it means at that time we were focusing, before we were focusing on the lecture, and then we also again focused on the lecture. For a certain period, we had the focus about our room, for example. So this is how a mental act can be drawn. Like, we are focusing on the lecture, suddenly we focus on the room, and then we again give our focus back to the lecture. So if we think about this incident, here we can see there was a time where we focused on our room, and before we were focusing on the lecture. So if you analyze this act, this particular act, focusing on the room, how do we interpret this? We would call, I remembered my room, I recalled my room, I thought about my room. This is how we explain this mental act. So this mental act itself of knowing an object, remembering an object, cognizing an object, or recalling an object, this is called the consciousness. Consciousness means something which happens within our body about recalling, knowing, thinking, or contemplating on something. This act is not a physical thing. This happens in the physical body. This happens in the physical body, but it is not something that can be explained physically. So therefore, this act is a mental act. We call it a immaterial sort of act. So according to Theravada traditions, scientifically, we may have different explanations. So this consciousness is explained as an immaterial act of cognizing certain objects. So one object at a time. So this is called consciousness. So when the consciousness cognizes a certain object, there are some more immaterial acts which happens together with consciousness. We call them mental factors. For instance, we recall our parents. We recall an enemy afterwards. So this, in both the acts are the basic characteristic of focusing on an object. Like, we focused on our parents, and then we focused on a certain enemy that whom we don't like, or who is trying to harm us. So in both the acts, when we are focusing on our parents, recalling on our parents, we normally have certain kind of loving feeling, affectionate feeling. And when we talk, think about the enemy, at the same time, in the different act, we have certain kind of anger or dislike towards that person. So in the both the acts, for example, if you think about focusing on the enemy, parents, and enemy. So in these both acts, the fundamental nature of cognizing an object is the same. That is same in both the acts. But there were different mixtures, different elements mixed with these two mental acts. In this act, we had love, we had compassion sometimes, we had an affectionating feeling, we had joy. But when we are focusing on the enemy, we had completely opposite sort of mental states. So if I draw it in another, because I think it's not visible there. If we talk, this is the parents and enemy. In these both acts, we had different mental feelings or mental emotions. So these feelings, these emotions that are connected with this consciousness. Consciousness means knowing a certain object. So together with it, there are certain mental factors which are bound with it. So these mental factors we call chetasikas. They can be attachment, sometimes it can be anger, sometimes it can be faith, it can be the effort, it can be eagerness, laziness. So there are various mental factors explained under the tradition of Theravada. So these are both of these qualities are called mentalities in our tradition, mentalities, because they are related to the mental acts. We call in Pali, call them nama. So if I repeat them again, consciousness or chitta is the act of knowing a certain object. Then chetasika or mental factors are the mental acts which are connected or bound with this consciousness. According to the tradition, consciousness can never appear alone. So they are all bound together. Traditionally, we call there are 52 types of mental factors and one type of a chitta. That is the normal explanation. One chitta doesn't mean that we are having one chitta for the entire life. Chitta is, or consciousness is something that arises and passes away. It, as soon as it arises, it vanishes. But still the generation continues. So this, while it momentarily arises and passes away, they are connected with certain mental factors. And Sally, can you explain again? Because I can see in the screen, some participants are having difficulties about the screen. Can you explain it again?
Now it's okay now. They already solved the problem.
Okay.
But Bandy, I think your screen is not clear.
Okay. You mean the light, is it?
It's a little bit like a blur. We cannot see very clearly.
Oh, okay. Light it up. Is it the same, still same?
Yeah, I don't know other friends, but from my computer, when I see, it's not very clear.
Okay, I'll try to write it.
We also cannot see clearly, Bante.
Ah, okay. You mean you cannot see the letters at all?
Difficult to see. Some letters can see, but some are disappeared already.
Ah, okay. So these are the two, though, will I write it again then? Is this clear with this color?
Swami Nuhan, sir. Is this the webcam are you using? In your computer?
Yeah. Hello?
Swami Nuhan, is this the webcam are you using in your computer?
Yes.
Computer, if you change the angle a bit, it might.
How about now?
Better. A bit better.
Great. How about now? Sorry for the inconvenience. So, can you see it now? Is it clear?
Yeah.
I think better if you can lift the computer a little bit up.
Little bit up.
Yes. Parallel where it's too down.
Is it okay
that
now?
And take it a bit closer to the screen. Yeah, and then take it two more closer to the board.
Okay, come on.
පොඩ්ඩක් උසල කිට්ටු කරන්න සයන්ස් ස්ක්‍රීන් එක.
How is it now?
It's the same.
Is it clear now? Is it clear now?
Board closer to the camera. The board is movable, right?
Yeah, board is movable. Okay, sorry. Again, it's board is
closer. And I think you need to slant it because it's too straight.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah,
slant. Yeah, get it move
yeah,
further.
Yeah, but that's much better.
Now better.
Now it's okay.
Okay. Now I have very little space to move.
Yeah, small space. Yeah.
Okay. So these are the basic fun. Shall I do the lecture now? Is it okay with the board?
Go ahead.
Okay. So chitta, we have chitta, the consciousness, and also the mental factors which come together with them. And then we have, we call them the mentalities. We call them in Pali as nama. Nama doesn't mean the name here. Nama means mentalities, right? So mentalities. So these are the things that I'll be explaining in the future lectures. So then we have another element called rupa. We have another element called rupa, which is translated as matter. There are also certain natures that do exist according to the Theravada tradition. For example, if I give some are called, they are physical attributes. They are not things like what we explain in science. According to the Theravada tradition, they are the hardness is a one quality, cohesion is a one quality, heat is a one quality. The nature of pushing outwards is another quality. So when these qualities come together, they do appear as certain things. So these things which are made, physical things which we experience in the world or in our life, are made out of these natures which are called rupa. They are just physical attributes. They are not the things. So these are the basic natures we talk in Theravada tradition. That was a brief explanation. Chitta, the consciousness. This is the act of knowing a certain object. Chetasikas or mental factors. The mental factors which are connected with this consciousness. And rupa, which are the physical natures which contribute for these physical things that we see in the world. So, I'll try to draw the holistic picture how these ultimate realities we call are explained in the Buddhist teachings. So though we say these chitta, chetasika and rupa as ultimate natures, there are four stages how we explain about these realities. Like some are called, these ultimate realities do appear, these chitta, chetasika and rupa, they do appear in a cognizable manner. At that time, we can see them, we can observe them, we can know them. Sometimes they are connected to our lives in different ways, like the suffering that is supposed to happen, the suffering that is bound to us. I'll come to that these explanations. So what I want to say is, even though we say this chitta, chetasika and rupa, generally, there are various stages that how we have to understand them. Then the idea of life, idea of continuation of suffering, continuation of life can be explained according to the Theravada teachings. So I'll be erasing this this diagram. So So this reality, the citta and consciousness, citta and cetasikas, I'll be using the Pali words, citta and cetasikas. It means the consciousness and mental factors. Is it clear? Is the body clear, or is it still having the same problem?
Yeah, it's
now clear. It's much better, much better. Please continue.
Okay. Bante, if you could bring the camera a little bit higher, we could see your face a little bit better. Just a little.
Okay, maybe that was simpler.
Yes, there.
Doing think, like this.
Yeah, I think we will be able.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry for this. Yeah, how about the board? Is it clear?
Yeah.
I hope it's better now. Okay. So these chittas and chetasikas, they appear together. It means they appear in clusters. In a one cluster, we have one consciousness, but various mental factors. These clusters in Pali, I'll be using certain Pali words for the easiness. We call it chittupada. In English, we can call it mental clusters. We call them mental clusters in English. It means, so what, according to Theravadians, a citta or neither a cetasika can arise alone. They appear together. And when we come to the rupa even, rupa also arises in groups. So that's why I use the ending S, it's in plural. So these rupas arise together. They are also appearing in clusters. We can call them physical clusters. In Pali, we call them Rupa Kalapa. We call them Rupa Kalapa. So everything in the world, according to the tradition, is made out of two different clusters, mental clusters and physical clusters. So what is the fundamental behind this, beneath this explanation? No reality in the world can exist alone. Everything is bound to each other. Bound to each other means either they appear in clusters which are connected with each other. So rupas are also connected to each other in a one cluster, and chetasika, citta and chetasikas are also connected to each other in one cluster. So nothing in the world, according to the tradition, appears alone. They are always connected with some other realities during their existing phase. That is a very basic fundamental. And then what happens, these clusters, according to Theravada tradition, arises and suddenly passes away. It arises and passes away. This arising and passing away has unique characteristics, according to the teachings. That is the one cluster, mental cluster. Now, I'll come back to the explanation if someone has forgotten. Chitta is consciousness knowing a one or certain object. Chetasika are the mental factors which are connected with this act of knowing. Then these, in a one cluster, for example, we focus on our parents or we focus on a tree. That act, that mental cluster arises and passes away. Before its arising, this cluster did not exist. That is a very important fundamental. After its passing away, it does not exist. So what happens? We have a momentary existence of this cluster. It didn't appear before that, and it will not appear after that. Now, for instance, if you take a sword out of a case, so we take the sword out and we show it, but the sword was already existing before we have dragged it out. It was existing in the case. And also we put it back into the case, even though we cannot see it, the sword is still found in the case. So, but in the Theravada tradition, the explanation is not so. It means the citta did not exist before its arising. It will not exist after its passing away. It's not the simile of the sword is completely opposite of the explanation given in the Theravada tradition. But there was a tradition called Sarvastivadins. They had a different opinion on this. They said the chittas and chetasikas, which arise and pass away, did exist before the arising and will continue to exist after the passing away in a different form, in a different appearance, or in a different state. So that is a very basic fundamental of the Theravadians and the Sarvastivadians, which was a ancient Buddhist school which existed during the third century of BC and also continued for some time. So according to them, the Chitta and Chetasikas do exist during the past, before, and they come into the arising and passing away phase, and then they disappears, but during do exist in a different manner. But according to Theravadians, it is something that completely comes newly and completely vanishes without hiding or getting stored anywhere. But then another very basic fundamental of the tradition is when this cluster which arises is caused by some other cluster. It means a chitta and chetasika, the reason for the arising of chitta and chetasika is another mental cluster. Another chitta and chetasika causes the arising of this chitta and chetasikas. Then this cluster, even though it passes away, it causes for another chitta chetasikas to arise. So likewise, what happens as soon, even though they pass away, another new chitta and chetasika would arise again. And this would also pass away. And this keeps on happening. This chitta and chetasika generation. So this has happened before even. The chitta and chetasika has another chitta and chetasika has arisen and passed away. So this is how the mental clusters, they remain in a generation. So within the generation, there is a momentary existence. But when we take though we take generation as a one thing, it is not the continuation of one reality throughout this generation. There are various realities happening in a rapid pace, but they are completely new realities caused by the previous reality. So this is a very important fundamental in the tradition, and this is what we are going to understand in the Vipassana of the Theravada teachings. In the Vipassana meditation, we are supposed to know this continuation. Not only the continuation, we are supposed to know one reality has its own existence, rising phase and passing away phase, and also the existing phase. So it is a momentary existing nature. Then we come into another momentary existing nature. Then we come to another existing phase. So this is called the continuation of the mind stream. And this, the same thing happens with regarding the rupas. The rupa kalapas are also clusters, and they do arise and pass away, but their lifespan is much longer than the rupa chitta chetasikas. According to the tradition, they have a longer lifespan. But then another, when it passes away, another rupa would arise, another rupas, a cluster of rupas would arise. But there's a slight difference between the generation of chitta chetasikas and generation of rupas. Now, in a chitta chetasikas, as soon as a chitta or chetasika group passes away, a new chitta chetasika would arise. But regarding the rupas, this is like the human generation. A new rupa would occur, a cluster of rupas would occur while the previous rupa is still alive, and then it would pass away later. This rupa is causing the arising of this rupa kalapas, while it is still existing. During this phase, the existing phase, this causes another rupa to happen. The same thing happened. This rupa would cause another rupa kalapa to occur while it is still happening. But still there is a generation going on. The difference of this generation is this, in the mentality generation, the daughter mentalities are caused by the mother mentalities immediately after its passing away. How they are related, they will be explained later. There are explanations on the Theravada teachings, how to explain this continuation of generation. Regarding the rupas, before the rupa passes away, rupas cause other rupas to happen, and they pass away slightly later. And these rupa kalapas cause another rupa kalapa to happen. So it is happening like the children are born, while the parents are still alive. And the generation still continues of the human race. So likewise, the Rupa generation is slightly different. So, but anyway, when we are talking about the suffering of the life, we don't emphasize on these two slight differences. So what we generally say is the Chitta Chetasikas continue one after each, one after another. Rupas also continue one after another. Though this explanation, so sorry for that, this is how the Rupas happen. One Rupa occurs. While the one rupa is still present, it causes another rupa to happen. And then while that rupa is present, it causes another rupa to happen. So this is how the generation of rupas continue, and this is how the generation of chittas continue. But generally we say rupas and chitta chetasikas and rupas continue one after another. So this continuation of nama and rupa, this continuation of nama and rupa is considered the suffering according to the Buddhist teachings. This continuation of nama and rupa is considered the suffering according to the Buddhist teachings. So why is that? Because as long as these chitta chetasikas and rupas are continuing, we are encountering the suffering of birth, suffering of aging, suffering of dying, and various others, lamentation, despair, and all. All these sufferings are found because of the continuation of this nama and rupa. And above that, the most important is why this is called a suffering. A very important characteristic trait is these realities are just non-self natures. We'll be explaining on these each and every this point in detail during the course. So I'll be giving a brief holistic introduction about the teaching. So I'll be talking about certain deep philosophies very briefly today, to give you a overlook. So these realities are not self, as we think, both the rupa and nama. It can be proven, and it can be proven with our own investigation. So therefore, it is a continuation of suffering. This continuation of suffering is not the continuation of suffering of a being. That is the most important, one of the most important factors in Buddhist teachings. For example, if as long as we are existing, we may encounter suffering, we may encounter happiness. So we can still strive to be more happier than we suffer. So still we can see there is something to be gained in this continuation. But according to the Buddhist teachings, what the Buddha is saying is, these realities which appear in clusters are not selves as we think. It's not the I, it's not the you or we as we think. So therefore, these are mere non-self realities. In short, we say the continuation of non-self realities which are suffering. That's how we explain Buddhism. Continuation of non-self realities which are suffering. When we say the continuation of realities, we are talking about momentary impermanence. So we have discussed about all the three universal aspects of the life: impermanence, suffering, and non-selfness. So impermanence comes because there's a momentary rising and passing. Each and every reality has a momentary existence. And these continuation and these realities are non-self. They are not the self as we think. And then their continuation brings immense of suffering marked by jati, jara, marana, birth, aging, dying, and various other suffering. So according to the Buddha's understanding, rebirth after life means it's a continuation of non-self realities which are suffering and also which are impermanent. So this is what the generations mean. So then we will draw this diagram more simply. So if we take, this is the continuation of chitta. One chitta arises, one chitta passes away, another chitta arises, another chitta passes away. This is the continuation of chittas. And then together with it, we have another generation called rupa. Generation of rupa arises and passes away. But there's a slight difference in how the generation is continuing, as I explained. But we ignore that part. We are just saying the generation of nama and rupa is happening. So then, this nama and rupa now we are coming to another very deep philosophical aspect. All this will be detailed, having reduced to different parts in the further lectures. So here, this continuation of life would end sometime at one point. This point is called the death, which the beings fear most. So this, after this death, now this continuation of Nama Rupa, this will end here. This would end here. So what happens? According to the Buddhist teachings, this generation of Nama and Rupa is not going to stop at the moment of death. This generation, these two generations are going to continue. So what happens? After death, new citta and cetasikas would continue. Then I'll draw it. Yeah, you don't have a different color. So we'll use this. The below is Rupa, above is Nama. It's not the, make them the same. So this is the Rupa generation, this is the Nama generation. So after death, it doesn't stop, it keeps on continuing. Buddha says, why do these two generations continue? To your extra knowledge, I would say the generation of Nama, we consider it as the same generation. Generation of Rupa, we normally say this Rupa and this Rupa in the two lives have no such connection, but the Nama has a certain connection. So anyway, we normally say the generation of Nama and Rupa continues. So here, another point is, now we can see this is a one citta, citta and chetasika, one cluster of citta and chetasika. This is a one Rupa Kalapa. This is the final Rupa Kalapa in this life, final citta chetasikas in this life. And a new Rupa Kalapa, new citta chetasikas arise and a new Rupa Kalapa arises. Nothing is moving from this life to this life. Not even a single citta chetasika of Rupa is moving. A new cluster is happening, completely a new cluster. But this new clusters will continue in again in generations are not entirely new. They are not entirely new. They have a certain relationship with this previous generation. What is this relationship? This new generation, which was caused after life, is the reason for this new generation. We call it the karma. We call it karma. So because of the karmas that we have done in the past, I'll draw it a bit late below. The karmas that have been done in the past causes this new generation to happen. So karma is a very important, karma plays a huge important role. Karma means, what does it mean by this karma? Is it apart from this citta and cetasika generations? Karmas are done in this generation. For example, someone do a karma here. If we think this is a citta that we do the karma, that it passes away, another citta arises, passes away. What happens? As long as we are not completely liberated as arahants, there is a certain energy that is going to remain in our mind stream. We call it the force of karma. That karma force will follow our mind stream. That is what the Buddha mentions. Tato nang dukkha manveti, the evil doer, the karma will follow the evil doer. The karma will follow the person who do the good things. So this karma force will follow the mind stream. And close to death, this will give a new rebirth in the next life. We call it the rebirth. So then this karma, how does it give? What is the logic behind it? We'll be discussing them under the chapter of karma. Each and every, all this, if you hear me. So the karma is causing this the new rebirth to happen. So karma plays a huge role here in bringing the rebirth. Then another fundamental of the teaching is this karma cannot do this alone by itself. Karma need the support of defilements. We call defilements. Defilements is, we call them avijja. Avijja is the ignorance. And tanha. Tanha means the craving. So because of this avijja and tanha, avijja is the ignorance about the reality. Tanha is the craving for this continuation. So only when these two are supporting the karma, Kamma is able to give a result. Kamma is able to give a result. So this is the generation of Rupa. I would call this the generation of Rupa. I'll call it R. And this is the generation of Nama. Nama is mentalities, Chitta Chetasikas, N, right? So this Kamma is bringing a result because it is supported by Avijja and Tanha. So these Avijja and Tanha and Kamma are not found in our mind like mental states. So we said mentality and mentality, the consciousness and mental factors, they do arise and pass away. So here what we are talking about, a different state, different stage of the defilements. It means now sometimes consciousness does arise with ignorance. Sometimes consciousness arises with craving. So we can experience certain defilements in the consciousness, in our consciousness. So here what we are talking is a latent defilement. Latent defilement means these defilements are not in the state of arising and passing away. These defilements are found latent. These defilements are found latent. Someone do a kamma, at that time we can experience, we have the intention to do a certain act. That act will remain as a force, as a latent force. So this kamma, what I'm talking here, is a latent force that has the capability to give a result. These defilements are latent defilements which are capable of supporting the kamma to give the result. So these two natures, latent natures, also play a huge role in the Buddhist explanation of Buddhist philosophy about the life. So the difference is, these natures cannot be explained as arising and passing away, like we explained about the Nama and Rupa. So when we talk about ultimacy, we talk about the Nama and Rupa, Chitta, Chetasika and Rupa, which arises and passes away as entities, as different clusters. And also we have to talk about these latent natures that causes the rebirth. So this is the, when we say about the continuation of suffering, this is the basic diagram. So then we can know if this was the birth of this life, there was a life before this, which also had Nama and Rupa. There was Nama and Rupa, mentalities, consciousness and matter. So this life in turn is also caused by a kamma in the previous life, and also that kamma is supported by ignorance, avijja, and also tanha. So they support the kamma. Kamma produces the rebirth. So this is how the cycle goes. So as long as the kamma remains in this life, defilements remains in this life, there'll be another rebirth. So this is how the continuation of suffering goes on. So then we come to conclude, before concluding the lecture, we come into the explanation about the liberation from this suffering. So now, if we think about, now as long as these causes are present, we are bound to get this suffering. We are not freed from this suffering. Now think for an instant, we think, now we are here, for instance. Now we are still not dead, but that will surely follow us. So we are, for example, if we take, this is the now point. We are here. Now. Now there is going to be lots of chitta and chetasikas going to happen in this very life, further till we die. Because as long as we live, there are going to be some chitta and chetasika occurring. So I mark them with broken lines. Right? For example, if I draw it more clearly. This is the suffering that is going to come, which has not arisen yet. In this life. Right? In this life. This is the suffering which has arisen. This is the suffering that we are experiencing now. For instance, if we take it if we still this moment. Then what happens? As long as kamma, avijja and tanha remains within our mind stream latently, we are bound to get this suffering after life even. So therefore, we are drawing, we don't say it has not arisen completely. Now, a person who thinks with a modern mindset would say, no, it has not arisen yet. So it is just an empty state. I mean, because the suffering that is going to come, we cannot say whether it is there or whether it is not there. But according to Buddha's philosophy, you can find this in the according to Nakasika Sutta. I'll be explaining on these facts more detailedly. So as long as the causes are prevailing, this is a very important philosophical point in the Buddhist teachings, which is not very, would not be very familiar with the modern mindset. As long as the causes are prevailing, even though the suffering, the result has not arisen yet, as long as the causes are prevailing, the Buddha says, we are not freed from the effect to come. I'll repeat again. As long as the causes are prevailing, even though the effect has not arisen yet, if it is supposed to arise, Buddha would say, we are not freed from this cause, this effect. Why is that? The cause is still prevailing. You will be freed from this effect only after the cause has been removed. As long as the cause is present, the effect, we are bound with the effect. So I may... Sorry for that. I think we were in a about the philosophical point in the teachings. Now I'll repeat again. Sorry, I'll be taking a few minutes more. Here we... I hope you can hear me.
Yes, Pandey.
So as long as the causes are prevailing, effect, even though the effect has not arisen, we are bound, because the cause is prevailing, we are bound with the effect. So this is a very important fundamentally the Buddhist teaching. So that is why the Buddha mentioned, even though we are experiencing lots of bliss at this moment, right? As long as we have experienced, even though we are experiencing lots of bliss at this moment, because the causes of the rebirth are still present. So Buddha would say, we are not freed from the suffering. So as long as the causes of rebirth are still present, Buddha would say, we are not freed from the suffering. You can find this fundamental in the Nakasika Sutta, in one of the suttas Buddha mentioned. That's why he mentioned, if when a person becomes a Sotapanna, the suffering he'll be freed is like the soil on the earth, and suffering he is supposed to encounter is like the soil he has taken on his nail. So what happened is, as even though we are here, we are not dead yet, there are some namarupa is going to happen. There, the samarupa of the next life is also supposed to happen. Nama and rupa. So these nama and rupa, even though they have not arisen yet, are considered existing in a certain form. Existing doesn't mean they are found, they do exist really. Here, existing means we are not freed from them. We are supposed to encounter this suffering as long as these causes are not eradicated. So this type of nama and rupa, which is going to happen, because the causes are prevailing, we call them anuppanna dukkha. Anuppanna dhamma, sorry. Or you can call it dukkha as suffering also. Anuppanna dhamma. This anuppanna means the realities which has not arisen yet. Here, even though they have not arisen, they are supposed to arise because the causes are still prevailing. right? So this is another aspect in the Buddhist teaching that we ignore these days mostly. So when we are talking about the samsara, we are talking about this suffering that we have encountered in the past samsara that we are experiencing now, and the suffering that is supposed to come. So this is also a very important aspect. Why this aspect is very important? To explain the Nibbana, the bliss of Nibbana, these Anuppanna realities are important. So these are the latent realities. We call them, there is a word, I'll be explaining them detailedly, Paramatta Jatika. So these are the latent ones. These are the non-arisen ones. These are non-arisen ones. These are the latent ones. These are the arisen ones. So we call them Paramatta Dhammas. These Nama and Rupa. Paramatta Dhammas. I'll erase this one. So these are the ones who have arisen, or they are connected with arising. I'll just, because if I say arisen, this may cause some confusion. So I'll just leave them as Paramatta Dhamma, the realities which has arisen or which has come into the state of arising and passing away. So then Paramatta, which are related to arising and passing away. That's the better to say. Paramatta Jatika is a latent potency. The non-arisen realities are really which are supposed to arise. So these are the three aspects of the ultimacy that we talked. Paramatta, realities which appear in clusters. That is the important factor here. They appear and pass away in clusters. There is no clustral explanation about these latent defilements, latent natures, karma and defilements. And then the suffering or the realities, citta and cetasika and rupa, matter, consciousness, mental factors that are supposed to arise because of the causes are prevailing. So these are the three aspects of Paramatta ultimacy that we discussed. The Paramatta Dhammas, these are the, for example, Nama, Rupa. We talked about the clusters, if you remember, in the beginning of the class. Then we have Paramatta Jatikas, the latent ones. These are the Kamma and the defilements. And then we also have Anuppanna, non-arisen suffering, suffering that we are bound. Now I'll conclude the class with the about the explanation of Nibbana. So what happens? Suppose we are here, we practice thoroughly and eradicate this craving and karma, for example. If we eradicate this craving and karma, these are the causes that would bring the suffering. What happens when these causes, Paramatta Jatikas, are eradicated? The suffering that is supposed to come will be erased before they are arising. Will be erased before they are arising. That liberation, that freedom from the suffering is called the Nibbana. Nibbana is not an empty state. Because when these causes are removed, the suffering that is supposed to come become eradicated before they are arising. They get eradicated before they are arising. The Anuppanna Dhammas are removed. So what happens? There is a state which is freed from that suffering. For that, we have to come from another aspect. Buddha mentions there are two states only, the continuation of suffering and its Nibbana, its Nirodha, absence. So it's like this. For instance, if we cover this board with a cloth, and we suddenly remove the cloth, what comes is the board. So likewise, Nibbana exists, the continuation of suffering exists. When the suffering that is supposed to come is eradicated or removed because of the removal of these causes, what is present is the Nibbana. So just the final explanation on this. For instance, if you think this is the continuation of suffering, this hand, this is the Nibbana. So Buddha mentioned, I mentioned only two states. So now think, this is the, till my fingers is the life of this life. If this is till my fingers is this life, the fingers are the lives to come, the suffering to come. So what happened is, now Nibbana do exist and the suffering is also happening. So this is the suffering we are encountering now. This is the suffering we are supposed to encounter, these fingers. So if the causes are removed while we are alive, what happens? The suffering that is supposed to come will be removed. These fingers will be removed. So what comes, what remains is the nirvana. Because I mentioned this is the nirvana, for instance. So when the causes are removed, the suffering that is supposed to come is removed. So what remains is the nibbana. This is called the attainment of nibbana. How it can be called the attainment, how it is useful, we'll be discussing this on the chapter of nibbana. It's like for to explain its existence, to explain its value, we have to come step by step to understand this phenomena. So nibbana is another ultimate nature. It is not related to life, because this is nama, rupa, latent natures, anuppanna dhammas. These all relate to the life. So nibbana is a completely different state. It is not mixed with this suffering. So that is why it is something beyond the life, beyond the world. So this is how the ultimacy has been explained. This is a holistic picture that I want to give. From time to time, from now onwards, I'll be talking about rupa, nama, these latent qualities, non-arising natures, nibbana in the further lectures. So I'll be concluding the lecture. Today we discussed about the ultimacy in the Theravada tradition, that nama and citta, cetasikas and rupas, they appear in clusters and they arise and pass away, remain in continuing in generations. And then their generation continues because of certain latent causes. And as latent causes are present, we are bound to the suffering that is supposed to come. If we remove the causes, that suffering will be removed and that will be the ultimate bliss. So these are the main aspects of our tradition. To attain that, to conclude, attain that, we have to practice. The practice has to come. The sila, samadhi, panya, virtue, concentration, wisdom has to be developed. Then only this will be eradicated. So that is the last aspect of Buddhism. After knowing this, what we have to do is develop the practical aspects to remove these causes and to attain the nirvana. So this will be the lecture today. So if you have any questions regarding, you are free to ask.
Hello, good morning, Bhante.
Good morning.
I'm from Panipitiya.
Oh, okay.
So I have one question about what is a different meaning from citta and cetasika? Can you explain again?
Different, yeah. Right?
Different.
Citta is consciousness. Erase this. Citta is consciousness. Cetasika is the mental factors. For example, if you take citta means knowing an object. There are various objects in the world. But at a time, we focus only on one object or a group of objects. So if you take the chip, now if we focus on this object, if you focus on this object, for instance, this focus is called the citta. What does this focus mean? This implicitly emphasizes that while there are lots of objects present, we are focusing on one object. It means we ignore all the other objects. So the basic explanation of citta is we collect a one object out of the lot. But this is not how it practically happens. This is the explanation. Because if we choose one out of the lot, because there are lots of possibilities that we can think about. So out of lot, when we focus on one, the literal explanation is we take one object out of the lot and focuses. So this is the very basic characteristic of cognition. So when we are talking about cognition, unless we focus on a one particular object, all the other cognitive qualities are not possible. So cetasika are, when we focus on a particular object, there are certain emotions related to that. For instance, we think about a beloved one, we think about an enemy. When we think about the beloved one, for instance, if we take now another citta, focuses on another object, one citta focuses on another object. So if this is the beloved one, with this focus, some emotions are mixed, like the affection, the love, sometimes the care. These qualities are mixed with it. But in, if you are focusing on an enemy, there is disappointment, sometimes anger, resistment. So these qualities are mixed with. So we have completely two different experiences. Even the basic characteristic of knowing or focusing an object is the same. They have different flavors in them. So such flavors which are mixed with this cognition are called chetasikas. So among this act of cognition, the very basic is the focus. So we call mano, pubbang, gama, dhamma. Mind is forerunner for the chetasikas. Dhamma is chetasikas there. If the focus was not done, all the other mental acts are not possible. This acts as the basis for the mental cognition. So then with that, certain emotions are connected. They are called chetasika. So chitta is the focus towards an object. Chetasika are the other mental qualities that are connected with that.
Okay, thank you, Pante. Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your question. Thank you.
Pante, I have a question. May I
ask
question?
Yes, sure.
Bante, how different is this the concept of karma in Buddhism versus the concept of Jainism, which is right now in India? Right now, there's a confusion among the people that, basically it's from India, basically it's about the same. So could you highlight that to us, how should we differentiate the this karma that teach by the in the concept of this karma, and how different is that versus the religion or Hinduism or Jainism in so that we could have a better understanding on this. Thank you, Bante.
Thank you very much for your question. So I'll give a brief explanation on this. I'll be elaborating on this in detail when we come to the chapter called Karma. And it's a very good question. First of all, I would like to say I have not studied thoroughly about the Karma in Jainism or Karma in Hinduism. So what I know is what has been mentioned in the Buddhist doctrine about the Jainism karma, and what we have learned, very basically learned about the karma in the Hinduism. So first I have to say, I'm not an expert or not thoroughly studied about the karma in those two religions. But according to the Buddhist teachings, what we have learned is, according to Jainism, so what the Mahavira has suggested is, because the suffering happens, the rebirth happens because of karma. He advocated there is a rebirth. So rebirth happens because of karma. So according to him, what you have to remove is the karma. For that, you should not do new karmas and you should not accumulate new karmas. So that's why they live a very strong austerity practice, giving up all the desires. And also they knew tanha, craving, is a boost for the karma. Certain ignorance is also a boost. So that's why they are supposed to give up all the sensual pleasures, even the clothes that brings the desire to cause the karma. So for that, what their main aim was to destruct the karma. So they thought by modifying the self, giving suffering to the body, giving tormenting the self, they'll be able to remove the karma. Like you sit on a noon on a very hot rock, and surrounded by four fires in the four directions, you sit on such a place, and this is called panchatapa. You are tormenting or you are heating the karma to remove that moisture of the karma, which can cause the suffering. So Buddha's aim was, he said, this karma has a cause. Karma, you cannot eradicate karma alone. According to Buddhism, you cannot eradicate the karma directly. We call about the destruction of karma. The karma destruction happens by eradicating the causes for the karma. Karma is caused by avijja and tanha. Tanha is a craving. As long as we have the craving, there will be a potency to give results. Then avijja, because of the avijja, the karma force remains. I'm not going to explain this in detail. So just briefly, I'm saying because of the avijja, the karma force will be remained after the karma was done. Because of tanha, karma has the ability to give results. These I will be discussing under the chapter of karma. So according to Buddha, these are the two causes for karma. Tanha is why, because of tanha, karma is giving the results. Because of avijja, karma gets stored. And anandis, now these are the two causes. Among them, tanha is the wish for the existence. Why do we have a wish? Because we are ignorant about the true nature of the life. So ignorance or avijja is the reason for tanha. Avijja and tanha both are the reasons for karma. So instead of now, you cannot remove the karma as long as these two remain. So what the Buddha's focus shifted from karma to the defilements. So out of the defilements, he found what is the basic? Because tanha is the craving. Craving happens because we don't know about the truth. So when we find that, when he found compared these two defilements, he found avijja is the basis for tanha to happen. So therefore, his aim was to eradicate the avijja. In order to eradicate avijja, you have to bring the opposite of avijja, that is called vijja. Vijja means the wisdom or science. Wisdom here means vipassana. So that is why he brought the vipassana meditation as opposing for the avijja. When avijja is not present, tanha will be removed. When tanha and avijja both are not present, karma will be removed. Then the suffering will be removed. So that is, I would say, these are the two differences of approach in the Jainism and Buddhism regarding the karma. Then as you asked, the question also was raised regarding the Hinduism. Now, according to Hinduism, we do, to my knowledge, maybe I'm not confident on that, but what I've heard was because of karma, yourself will transmigrate from life to life. Like a bird be traveling from tree to tree, yourself will transmigrate from life to life. But according to Buddhism, it's a different thing. Karma is an act, a force remains. Because of this karma, new consciousness, new rupa would appear. But these new rupa and new consciousness are not completely new because they are related to the previous generation. How do we find the relationship? Because the karma which produced them were accumulated in this generation. I'll repeat again. These new nama rupa which occur after life are not entirely new. They are new in terms of mind and matter. They are in terms of, if I draw it completely, they are in terms of mind. And if you take someone has born, right? They are not entire. They are new in terms of mind and matter, new clusters, but they are not entirely new. Why is that? New. It's not a completely a new generation. Why? The cause of these nama rupas are the karma. That karma was accumulated in this generation. For example, if you take, this is the kamma chitta. If you think this is the chitta which caused the kamma, this is the energy which remains after passing away. So this kamma is related to this generation. So the new generation, in a linear manner, it is connected to this new generation. So therefore, according to Buddhism, there is no self transmigrating. New generation would continue because of the cause of karma. So that is another very important aspect, difference from Buddhism and Hinduism, as far as I know, because there's no self-transforming, just a continuation of nama and rupa due to karma.
Okay. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Thank you, Bhante.
Okay. Bhante, I have a question.
Yeah, sure.
We don't have the carving and don't have the new karma when we... For example, get the Nibbana. How about the past karma will cause the Nibbana afterlife?
Yeah, it's a very good question. So, for example, when you become a karma, we don't accumulate new karma. So we have done a lot of karma in the past. Can they cause the suffering? Is it your question?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a very good question. It's a very tough one, actually. Thank you for that. So for that, I'll come into the explanation again. So because of the past karma, which were done in the past lives, we are born here. So now we do new karmas and we get the karma energy, we are born again. So we know when we become an arahant, we are not accumulating new karmas. You go into Ratana Sutta, we have a statement, Kinang Purana. Kinang Purana means past has been is exhausted. Kina is exhausted, finished. Puranang is past. This Purana has to be modified by the word karma, Puranang karma. It's not just the past. past is already gone, that is for sure. What happened in the past is gone. But here we are talking about a Puranang Kamma. Kamma means the actions that were done in the past, right? Then Navang Natti Sambhavang. Navang Natti Sambhavang means he's not accumulating Navang Kamma. Right? Excuse me. Navang Kammang Natti Sambhavang. Right? So these, what is in the bracket, you have to insert, even though they are not mentioned in the sutta. So we are not accumulating new kammas. The past kamma is exhausted. For that, we have to be very delicate in this explanation. So what does it mean? After someone has eradicated, for instance, if you think, we think, one becomes arahant here. This is the moment one becomes an arahant, for instance. If someone becomes an arahant here, you also mention avijja and tanha are necessary for the kamma. Avijja and tanha are necessary for the kamma. Because of avijja and tanha, kamma is accumulated, right? So now we take, if a person becomes an arahant, avijja and tanha is removed. So the new kammas, new acts, what we do, new acts are not going to bring a new force. So there will be no new kamma. That's what we say, Navang Natti Sambhavang. Because avijja and tanha were the reason for this kamma to be stored. So there will be no new kamma. The question comes, there have been a lot of past kammas done. Right? Before his, for example, Angulimala did a lot of past kammas. So what are these? Now there's no new kamma coming. Are they not, the past kammas, are they not capable of giving a rebirth? This is a very good question because new kamma is not done. So for that, we come into another fundamental of the teaching. This will also be explained in detail when we come to the lesson of causality. Anyway, as the question was raised, now because now this past kamma to give a rebirth, new kamma to accumulate, you need avijja and tanha. And also according to the doctrine, past kammas to give a new rebirth, there should be support. So avijja and tanha are not only supporting for the accumulation of kamma, they are also supporting for the kamma to be productive. The productive nature of the kamma remains as long as avijja and tanha is there. It's like the wetness of a certain, now for instance, if something gives a sprout because of certain quality, like living quality. So that living quality was given, if we say the seed has a quality of bringing forth a sprout, the seed is like the kamma, that quality of a giving, ability to give life is there's a quality. So likewise, the kamma is the thing that which gives the result. Its ability to give results also remains as long as avijja and tanha are present. Its ability to give results means there are two types of results. Results within this life and results in the following life. So when I say ability to give life, I'm talking about the giving a rebirth. So now it can be a little bit complicated. I'll try to simplify this. Avijja and tanha makes the kamma to get accumulated. That is what is called when arahant has removed. There is no new kamma accumulated. Then how about the past kamma? Past kamma has been accumulated. They can give results as long as the arahant is present and also give a rebirth. But avijja and tanha makes the kamma productive, keeps the kamma in that productive state of giving a rebirth, not avijja, as long as avijja and tanha is present, kamma can give a rebirth. So avijja and tanha, when they are removed, this kamma is no more productive in giving a rebirth. It is very difficult to explain, but it can be explained how this kamma is produced, why the avijja and tanha is necessary for the past kamma to give a rebirth. If we start this discussion, this could drag the time. So then what happened? The kamma can give results in this life even. For that ability, that productiveness, so there are two types of productiveness. Productiveness in giving a rebirth, productiveness in giving this result in this life. So when avijja and tanha is removed, kamma, the ability to give a rebirth will be removed. But the ability of the past karma to give results in this life is not removed. It is the avidya and tanha, because the reason is because this life has already started. It is started given by a certain karma. As long as the life is going on, after the life has started, even though avidya and tanha are removed, they are not able to stop the past karma giving the result because it has already started. That is the main reason. But for that, we have to understand what is a life and so forth. So for the time being, I'll explain, they, by removing them, the productivity of karma in giving a rebirth is removed. So by removing that, in a nutshell, to conclude, avidya and tanha, when they are removed, karma is not accumulated. Past karma, new karma is not accumulated. Past karma is not, capability of past karma giving a rebirth is removed, but the ability of the past karma to give results in this life is not removed. That's why Mahamoggallana, after being an arahant, had to experience the suffering in this life, even during his moment of death. But Angulimala also had to encounter certain sufferings. But actually mentioned before his arahanthood, but his kammas that he was done could not give results in the next life. So that is how we explain according to the Theravada tradition. I hope you got the point.
Can we say that because the oil is here, but no sparking, that's why no fire to burn again the whole oil to the next life?
We can say, yes, that's truly correct. That's truly correct. Thank you. Okay. That's truly correct. So therefore, we are not completely, now, according to Buddhism, you cannot completely directly eradicate karma. What you do is, you eradicate the defilements, which are supportive to karma. So the karma is not capable of giving a result. This is called the destruction of karma. Karma destruction is not like the defilement destruction. Kilesa destruction is completely opposite. By bringing vidya, which is opposite of avidya, you can completely destruct the avidya. When the avidya is destroyed, tanha is destroyed. When these two are destroyed, karma loses his ability to give a rebirth. So that is called the tanhakkhaya, the destruction of karma.
Okay, thank you. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
You're welcome.
Hi, Bante. I have a question.
Yes. Okay. Right. Yes, Yale.
So, just out of curiosity, you know like how earlier when you explained when the mice arise, right? So, in that mice, sometimes there is active defilement and latent defilement. And when we talk about avijjas and tanha, these are latent defilements most of the times. So just out of curiosity, I understand that these mind, when it's like all these mental factor, when it's active, it stay in the mind, it arise together with the mind. But when the latent mental factor, where do they store? Do they still stay with the mind? So that's the first question. The second question, when we talk about vipassana meditation, we talk about catching the objects at the present moment, right? The present moment, that's mean the arising mind, that means there's active defilement. So how is it that vipassana catching this active defilement be able to eradicate this latent defilement? Does it make sense?
Yeah. Thank you, Sally. Thank you for your question. So first one is now we talk about the defilements arising in the mind and also the latent defilements. So when the defilements arising in the mind can be observed, can be seen, we can experience it. So where the latent defilements are stored, so because even though we draw this diagram, we have to understand one citta exists at one time. These cittas have, if this is the moment, these have passed through. If this is the moment, all have passed through. So a question comes, where do the latent defilements remain? So there is no explanation given on the text, on the doctrine about this. What we say is they remain associated in the mind stream. There are two types of associations. Now, when consciousness arises, it is associated by mental factors like defilements, the emotions and so forth. So that association is very observable. But the latent defilements do associate the mind stream. How do we say? Because they affect the mind. Even though they are not observable as the normal defilements which arises, we say they are affecting the mind. So their effect can be seen. They are, even though we are doing, for instance, we have... When we have undergone a strong defilement, even though we practice kusala at a certain time, we can see still the akusala effect is found. Then, and also when we do a kusala, the karma force is stored. Why? At the moment of kusala, we don't have defilements, but these defilements are affecting the kusala chitta. So that's why the karma is stored. So according to Buddhism, these latent defilements are affecting the mind, but they are not observable. How can they become observable? Then when they arise as a mind. So there is no explanation where it is stored. Only thing we say is it is associating the mind. That is why it is affecting the mind. So their association with the mind should be proved. Proved means should be is understood by their effect to the mind. So the next question was how in Vipassana meditation we observe the moment rising when the defilements are rising at the moment of their defilements are observed at the moment of their arising. So to be true, according to Theravada tradition, the Vipassana is not exclusive to the present moment. That is something that we have to understand in detail. This present moment Vipassana observation is just one technique of the Vipassana tradition. So it doesn't cover the entire Vipassana. It doesn't mean that observing the Chitta Chetsikas as they arise is not a Vipassana. It is a Vipassana. You can do Vipassana likewise. But it doesn't cover the entire range of Vipassana. It's just a partial technique by which you can attain. But the Theravada Vipassana is not exclusive to observing the mind moments that arise on that moment. Technically also, you cannot observe a mind in the present moment because when you're observing a certain mind, it has already passed away. So there is no Vipassana you can do in the present moment in technically. What we are doing is when a Chitta arises, we just focus it immediately with another Chitta. It has already passed away. So technically, there is no present moment Vipassana. But for example, and also the object of Vipassana is not necessarily to be immediately passed even according to the teachings of Theravada, and that you can practice in that manner, which is not popular today in today's Vipassana techniques. So now observing these defilements, how can they eradicate? So that's why now we have an idea when a defilement arises, this ceases. When we observe it, it ceases. It doesn't appear anymore. So this is not the eradication of defilements what we are talking in the liberation. So what is happening is when we understand thoroughly the nature of the nature of the world, whether it's a defilement or whether it's a kusala chitta, whether it's a rupa, when we keep on observing the conditioned natures again and again, unconsciously, that wisdom, for example, if you are doing Vipassana here, that Vipassana wisdom affects these latent defilements. These effects of latent defilements, you cannot observe. Now, for example, when a kusala chitta arrives, you observe it a kusala chitta, that continuation of akusala will be cut off. That is the one thing. That is called tadanga pahana. You suppress the defilement by through observation. But we are talking about a vikkamana pahana. So what happens, whether you observe a defilement or not, even we are observing a kusala chitta, akusala chitta, rupa, kriya chitta, vipaka chitta, when we keep on observing, a wisdom will be developed. This wisdom, the strength of this wisdom, that is the nature of pahana. That is a different topic. When this wisdom which arises in the mind, even though it arises as a mind, my mental factor, it has the ability to suppress, to push, to eradicate these latent defilements which are connected, related to the mind. So if this Vipassana wisdom arises at the magga, Lokuttara magga, what happens? These defilements will be eradicated. So what is eradicated is not the defilements which are arising in the mind. So how do we find it? Now the question is, defilements can be observed in the mind when they arise. How do we know these defilements are eradicated? That is the very basic fundamental of the tradition. What the Buddha mentions, his explanation was, develop this path, develop this practice, these latent defilements will be removed. There is no logical explanation for this. Only thing is, practically you can see when we practice certain good qualities, our latent defilement, the arising level of latent defilement reduces and it will be completely cut off one day. So that is the direct answer is, when the Vipassana wisdom arises, the latent defilements will be affected. Because latent defilements affect the mind to produce the karma, the same way wisdom affects the latent defilements. And it is its ability to cut off them one time.
Thank you, Bante.
Okay.
I just want to make sure I understood the first explanation. So is it safe for us to say that these latent defilement, because normally we say that there's a defilement in our mind.
Mm-hmm.
That's a general saying. So what right. we mentioned about this defilements, we think about either active or inactive, latent
inactive.
Or active.
Mm. Yeah.
So is it safe for us to say that these, you know, Chetasika, Tanha, and Avichas are in our mind? Because you say that there's no direct explanation. There's only association with the mind. But there's
yeah.
no like, oh, it stay or it stores in the mind, no?
Mm. When sometimes Buddha mentioned that our mind is with defilements. It can have two explanations. Either it has arisen as a mind moment or either it is the latent defilements. You can see it in the Mahamalukya Putta. In that Malukya Putta, Mahamalukya Sutta. So, according to him, he's now the suffering, the rebirth happens, we are bound to suffering, not because of the defilements which happen in the mind, because of the latent defilements. So, when we say a person is with defilements, according to Buddhist teaching, we have to understand whether he's talking about the active defilement or the inactive defilements. According to the context, we have to understand. That's what the tradition is helping.
Can I? Regarding
yes, already the time has passed. Yeah.
Okay.
So how do you think? So is it okay if we if you can write the questions?
Sure.
I'll be discussing them in the next week, Saturday, Sunday.
Should we email or to any website?
Yeah. So yeah, I'll write my email. This is my email.
Bande?
Yes.
Actually, it's so high. Could you please? We cannot see the board.
Sorry.
Okay.
Maggavihari at gmail.com. So please email to this. I'll be in the next week in the question and answer session. I'll take the questions that you have raised and I'll be discussing them.
Maggavihari
at okay. gmail.com.
Sadhu Bande. Okay. Thank you.
Right. Thank you. I know it's some wants to ask a question. Sorry for that because of the time.
Thank you, Bante.
So, yeah. Thank you very much for
thank
listening.
You much,
okay,
Thank you very much, Bante.
Anumodami Bante, yeah.